Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
An unusual convergence is about to take place at the Boston Symphony Orchestra. A composer, a conductor, and a soloist will all perform together on stage. What's even more unusual, the three roles will be filled by two men. First, meet the soloist.
You got all our players from Ottawa. You know, you've got Chara, you've got Wade Redney, you've got all these guys. And you close up the Bruins.
This is world-renowned violinist Pinchas Zukerman. Other than being passionate about hockey, Zukerman is considered one of the greatest living masters of the violin. Sitting across from him in a symphony hall rehearsal room is the composer and conductor, Oliver Newson.
Are you going to sit there holding that? You're going to get cramp holding that like that.
Nah, she's going to be.
It's what I get, I get paid the big bucks, yes.
Unbelievable. They don't even give you the big bucks for the stand.
Other than being charmingly concerned that I had no microphone stands for our interview, Newson is considered one of the most important living British composers today. His pedigree includes composing for the London Symphony Orchestra when he was just 16 years old, and then coming to Tanglewood for further mentoring from legendary composer and conductor Gunther Schuller. Zukerman and Newson have known each other for decades. When in the same room, they have that vibrant, electric energy you feel only when two masters of music come together. Tonight and tomorrow, they will be performing a violin concerto Newson composed especially for Zukerman back in 2002. Zukerman will solo on the Symphony Hall stage. Newson will conduct. I spoke with both of them a little earlier this week about the story behind the making of Violin Concerto Opus 30.
I want to begin by asking you, had you ever been asked to compose for a specific artist before this piece that you're going to be performing here?
You mean the Violin Concerto?
Yeah,
which
the Violin, yes.
To Zukerman,
yes.
My esteemed colleague here. Yeah, I think he was one of the first people to ask me, because this goes back to when we were both pretty much just starting out. I was a kid, and when Pinchas first did, I think one of the first times he played a concerto in London, I was at the rehearsal, and he says, "Hey, Ollie, write me a concerto," and I went, "Uh-huh," and he kept after me for years, and eventually there was a piece that I had been commissioned to do that I did not want to write, of a certain other variety, and I called the manager of the orchestra concerned, and I said, "Would you mind if instead of doing this, I wrote a violin concerto for Pinchas Zukerman?" And he said, "Fine," and that's what happened. And finally, it happened about a quarter of a century after he'd asked for it.
Pencils went a little dry.
Why did you keep after him for so long?
Well, there are very few people in a given century that can make a difference. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to writing music, Ollie is one of them. When you hear Ollie's music, you know you want to hear it again, and you're going to play it again. And that is what it's all about. When great art is written like that, there are very few, a handful at most.
Pinchas also taught me a very good lesson about writing for the violin without ever really talking about the violin. In 1985, I think it was, he put on my opera Where the Wild Things Are in St. Paul, and it was the first American performance of it, I think. And I was there for the rehearsals and all this, and at some point he said, "You know, your violin parts are really boring." And I said, "Well, thanks a lot." And then he said, "Your vocal parts are good violin parts." When I started to write this, what got me going writing this was thinking of the thing as a big aria. It was a question of getting myself in the frame of mind where I could write a piece where the violin simply sings.
Thank you. as a composer, when you're writing for a specific artist, and in this case, a very talented and well-known one, how do you go about doing that? I mean, are you thinking of Mr. Zuckerman? Were you thinking of Mr. Zuckerman as each note was going down? Or what are the...
Of course.
And so what do you think about in particular,
though? Well, you don't think consciously about it, but I had just the sound of his playing in my ear. It's like you would write for a voice. If you write for a voice, you know what that particular person is going to sound like. Using that principle, I was writing for the voice of his violin.
You know, there's the old stories about Brahms and Joachim, for example. And I think that we are very lucky and fortunate to have had Brahms, of course. Yeah. But at the same time, to have Joachim recite to him, yes, I love this piece, and I think it's wonderful, but would you mind changing that note or that bar?
Yeah.
And the same goes with Schumann, Clara Schumann, when he sent her scores. Mm-hmm. I think he was thinking a lot about her playing the piece. And so it does help, of course. And, you know, there are people like Spohr and Wieniawski and all these wonderful violinists that wrote for themselves, Paganini, for example, that actually changed the character of the instrument as they were writing. But it's not necessarily the composer that Ollie is, of course. And that's where the difference is. Because it's the simplicity of the notes, it's the depth of the score, and then comes the expression of the performer.
That's an interesting hierarchy, because I was wondering if the first time...
No, that's an admission of truth about great music. I'm sorry to correct you.
I welcome being corrected.
I see a lot of scores where I turn the page and there's nothing in there.
When you first saw the score, even though you put the musician third in that hierarchy, when you saw what he had written...
I mean the performer.
The performer, yeah.
The performer.
But I was wondering, when you saw the score, did you think to yourself, yes, this is me, this is my sound?
He didn't have time to think about it, and he saw it on the day of the concert, practically.
I received the pages in fax format in different hotels that I would go to. He would send me the next page of the violin, and then I'd say, well, what's happening down here? And he would say, well, I think there's going to be a harp and there's going to be a little percussion, something or other. I went, oh, that's good. And so I would already know that that pizzicato belonged to the percussion, for example. So I'll tell you what, I'll show you something. You read music?
Oh, I used to ages ago, but I'm afraid I'm illiterate now.
Just in case you think that I'm joking, but this is the original fax that I got. That's the music I play from. Because it, of course, is published
that's a,
now.
That's one fax page. So I'd write
and
the thing
out,
that's oblong.
But look how clear that is. It's absolutely, that's Ollie, you see? It came out absolutely, I mean, it's perfect.
That's
look at
amazing.
That. Now, it's been published, of course, but I don't like the published part.
So you still play from the original faxes. That's remarkable.
The only thing I'm going to do here, because it's getting a little bit old, my buddy here at the library is going to enlarge it just a little bit, because when we first started playing, I didn't have these reading glasses for music.
What in particular do both of you love about this piece?
I'm not allowed to say that because I wrote it. I'll tell you what I love about it. Okay, I can say, I love that it actually, finally, it was a pleasure to write. And in fact, it was such a sort of automatic process that I really didn't know kind of what it was until after I'd gotten home and listened to the recording from the first performance a couple of times. Hang on, this is the piece I really wanted to write. Yeah, that's what I like about it. It's completely selfish.
Isn't that wonderful? I love it.
It came out okay.
Yeah, it came out okay. It sure did.
And what about you?
Well, structure. It's got the structure. It has a very clear beginning and clear end, which is what all these great things. You need structure in life. You need structure in everything.
Is it fair to say that in my few minutes of being able to observe the two of you together, that you enjoy working together?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We don't do it often enough, actually, but we've done it over a long period of time.
He's played the piece with other people, of course, the violin concerto, and I've played it with other
conductors. Yeah, I've been unfaithful, you see.
It's so exceedingly rare to have everyone on stage together, composer, conductor, and performer, around one work. So what is that like, being on stage performing and conducting together?
For me, it's scary, because I need to really make sure that I play the right notes.
you mean when you're conducting?
know when I'm playing with you.
Oh, well, really? Okay.
And because even today, he finally found a wrong note I've been playing all these years. So I said, oh, my God, you didn't hear this all this time?
Yeah.
I didn't know it. I didn't. Anyway, that, one of those things. So you do prepare in a very kind of acute way. I have a great, great respect for the composer, especially when it's great. That's where I come from. And I try to do my best. I try to do what I can to make the music speak in a most natural, wonderful way.
Isn't it at the same time a remarkable opportunity because you can get that immediate feedback and the two of you can work together in the moment?
Yeah, but you see, if one's giving feedback all the time about, oh, I want it this way, I want it this way, I want it this way, you're missing out on the other nice aspect of working with somebody. But especially now, we haven't done this piece together for a few years. And so how Pincus is playing it is going to have changed a little bit. And for me, it's wonderful to just, you know, I know how I thought of it going. And it's interesting to see the little variations that creep in or what he's found different or little inflections that are different. You find a different aspect of what you wrote down there that is actually what the other person brings to it.
Is there anything else either of you would like to say?
No, it's just wonderful to work with Pincus again. And we always have a good time together. We've had a good time together in many different parts of the world. But this is really nice just to be here. And just.
Well, before I start playing, I hope he writes another one. At least something. An elegy. How about an elegy?
That's too sad.
Yeah,
A romance.
Romance in memoriam.
No, just a romance.
Just a romance.
The memoriam.
Okay, there you go. See, I'm just giving him a title just to excite him a bit, you know.
A romancer.
Yeah. And now you're on the record as having said you will write something.
No, I didn't. I just
got the title. No.
That was a sleight of hand which failed. Oliver Newson and Pincus Zukerman will be performing the Violin Concerto Opus 30 with the Boston Symphony Orchestra tonight and tomorrow at Symphony Hall. There's more information at our website, radioboston.org.
And that's Radio Boston for today and for this week. Our program is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.